Spirit 88.9 FM, Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is
Chris McGregor.
And today we are joined by Mike Aquilina. Mike, author and editor of more than a dozen books on Catholic history, doctrine, and devotion. He is, among other things, vice president of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology based in Steubenville, Ohio. Mike has also co-hosted with the great, great Catholic Scott Hahn, The Lamb's Supper in 2001, Hail Holy Queen, First Comes Love, last year's Lord Have Mercy, and a new program, Swear to God, all airing on EWTN. He also appears regularly as a panelist on the weekly Roman Observer broadcast by Catholic Family Network. Mike's career in publishing spans a couple of decades, and hundreds of his articles have appeared in countless periodicals and journals in the United States and abroad. And now Mike can add being a guest on KVSS to his resume.
And that makes me happy.
Yay, it makes us happy too because, well, Mike, you have given the church a great gift because you have helped to bring the fathers of the church alive once again to us.
Well, I'm happy to do that because the fathers are such a great gift of the church to its people. And I fell in love with the fathers upon first meeting them, and I want a lot of other people to do the same.
And that's what's so wonderful about your writing is that you have a style that just engages us, and you make them come alive.
When I first started looking into the fathers, I couldn't find any books written on my level. So I often say that I wrote the books I needed to read.
Well, thank you for that.
Yes, we needed those.
Well, they're fun to write, and the fathers are fun to read. I'm hoping a lot of people will grow interested in them. They really are the early witnesses to the life that our Lord left us, the life that that is the gospel. Some of the writings of the fathers of the church even predate the writings of the New Testament. So they're good to get to know because then we can see the New Testament writings in a larger context, a cultural context, and an emerging, you know, Christian world.
They really seem to fill what is perceived, may not be reality, but a perceived gap in what we call the tradition of the church. They help us understand the tradition of the church.
Absolutely. We can see the way that the earliest Christians were interpreting the text of the New Testament, for example, and the way they were living the gospel day to day, their liturgical life, for example, the way they were living the Mass. And we can see this in every single generation stretching back to the apostles, that the life we know today, the life of the Catholic Church today, really has not substantially changed since 48 AD.
Mm-hmm.
So, right.
You know,
right.
Going back even further. The fathers are witnesses to the tradition. That's what the Catechism says. They don't define the tradition, but they are always timely witnesses to the tradition. When we read the fathers, we can see the life of the church back then, and boy, it sure looks like the life of the church right now.
It sure does.
Yes.
And the thing is, when they in their writings, which it's a shame if we don't access them, because there's a wisdom in how they understood the gospel and how it related to their communities.
Yes, because they weren't dividing the labor the way we do today. Some of them were great scholars, but even the great scholars tried to tailor their wisdom for a popular audience. Most of the fathers were preachers and popular teachers. They didn't have universities where they could go off and stare into their navels and write, you know, books with big words. They were preaching these things from the pulpits, and they were gradually refining it until they really developed a stirring way of delivering the gospel. And it works across the centuries. We read them today, and they're really exciting. The guy we read that we're going to talk about eventually, St. Ambrose, is probably the most accessible of the fathers,
mm-hmm.
modern readers, because he had the most simple, most direct, and most straightforward style.
Now, Mike, maybe enlighten all of us. Who are the fathers, and
how were they determined to be of that stature?
Right.
I mean,
well, from the beginning of the church, and even at the time Christianity arose, we find the first Christians. And the subsequent generations, whenever they wanted to teach something, they wanted to make sure people understood, this isn't my teaching, this is Jesus' teaching that he gave to the apostles. So often what they would do is they would establish a chain of doctrine. In Latin, the word is catena, and that's the word they use in theology. That they would establish a chain of doctrine that went from their generation back to the time of the apostles. I learned this from so-and-so, who learned it from so-and-so, who learned it from so-and-so, who learned it from the Apostle John. And we have these intact from so many generations. For example, the Apostle John taught Polycarp and baptized Polycarp, who was the bishop of Smyrna very early on.
Right.
And we have Polycarp's writings. So we know what Polycarp learned from John. Now, Polycarp was the teacher, and he baptized a guy named Irenaeus. And Irenaeus eventually went on to write many, many volumes. And he relayed to us the teachings of Polycarp. And after Irenaeus, we have his disciple, Hippolytus, who credits everything to Irenaeus, and so on, all the way back to John. So there was always this concern for them, for the fathers, to express, this is not my teaching. It stretches all the way back. So we see that the fathers revered the fathers who came before them. So anyway, that the fathers are the select group of teachers from the early church, and they're the ones that the church reveres in its tradition.
And again, just to, I think it bears repeating, that's what our tradition, we talk about, we have scripture, but we also have tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Tradition is rooted in that continual handing on and passing on of that knowledge.
That's right. And the scriptures are even part of the tradition because the scriptures themselves were not canonized until the late fourth century, early fifth century.
Right.
That's when the church settled on which books were definitely in the New Testament and which books were definitely out of the New Testament. Until then, there was some debate about what could be used in public worship and what could not be used in public worship and what could be cited as authoritative and what could not. It was the fathers of the church, the bishops, meeting in council, who decided on which books were in and which were out.
We're going to take a quick break, Mike, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the saint that we're celebrating today, Saint Ambrose of Milan, who had something very important to teach. He came along in a life in the church where some very important decisions and events needed to be discerned.
Oh, yes.
Spirit 88.9 FM, Catholic Radio for the Christian Community. Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And today we are joined by Mike Aquilina. His latest book, Living the Mysteries, A Guide for Unfinished Christians. I love that. Until we get to heaven, we're all unfinished Christians. Anyway, Chris.
and it is. It's a fantastic book, and you help us to understand how we can learn from the fathers.
I enjoy doing that. I worked with Scott Hahn on that book, and Scott's always a joy to work with. He's bright, and he shares my love for the fathers.
Help us to understand the difference between the Greek fathers and the Latin fathers.
Well, the difference is geographical, largely. The fathers who are usually placed in the list of the Greek fathers are the fathers of the Eastern churches, and the fathers who are usually placed in the list of Latin fathers are the Western fathers. Most of them did write in the languages you see there. The Greek fathers tended to write in Greek, and the Latin fathers tended to write in Latin. There were cultural differences at the time, and there were even different emperors in the different sections of the empire. There was an Eastern emperor and a Western emperor. So there were serious differences, and sometimes there were conflicts in the early church. The guy who we're going to discuss today, St. Ambrose, was someone who was a Western father who had a profound appreciation of the Eastern fathers who went before him and of all the Eastern traditions that were active in his time. And he was someone who brought a lot of those Eastern traditions into the Western church.
Mm-hmm.
So one historian wrote that if there had been more men like Ambrose in the church, the schism between East and West would never have happened.
Wow, that's quite a statement to make of someone who was not even a baptized Christian when he became a bishop.
Right. Yeah. Ambrose was an amazing guy. Even very young, he was something of a yuppie, I guess. He was at a young age. He just started rising up the the latter in public service. His father had been a high government official, and Ambrose was just in his early 30s when he was made governor of a rather large province in the Roman Empire, and its capital was Milan, and what we find is at that period there was a heresy. It was the largest heresy, the most famous heresy of the early church, called Arianism, and it denied that Jesus was divine, that he was co-eternal with the Father.
Sounds like we have that heresy around today too.
Oh, we do. All the ancient heresies are still alive today, in one way or another. But this really took over the church, and Saint Jerome described the situation. He said it was very sudden, and it suddenly emperors were taking on this new religion, really, and even bishops. And he said the world groaned awake to find itself Arian, and the Church of Milan was really divided, because they had an Orthodox bishop, a Catholic bishop, who was taken away in chains, exiled in chains to the East, and he was replaced by an Arian bishop who served for more than two decades.
Wow.
And there were these factions in the city, either Catholic or Arian, and the Empress, Justina, ended up taking up residence there, and she was Arian.
Oh.
And Ambrose was governor, and he was trying to deal with this, and the emperor was very much concerned about it, because he was afraid there would be riots and maybe even civil war in that area, and he didn't want to see that. And so when the Arian bishop died, there was a very contentious meeting, because the people or the clergy would often elect the bishops in the early church. They would
usually
propose the name of the successor to the bishop who died. Well, they met, and it was kind of a nasty meeting, and Ambrose rushed in to try to restore peace. And the story goes that a little child said, "Ambrose for bishop." And suddenly, the entire crowd picked up the cry, "Ambrose for bishop, Ambrose for bishop, Ambrose for bishop."
Wow.
And they started chanting it, and he found his name as the one he had to present to the emperor. And Ambrose was indeed, the emperor insisted that Ambrose should become bishop, and Ambrose was not yet baptized.
Wow. He was in the catechumenate, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And he came from a devout family. As a matter of fact, he numbered some martyrs among his ancestors, and it was a family of Roman nobility going way back, the early empire. But he had not yet been baptized. At that time, it was the custom to delay baptism until adulthood. And he was awaiting baptism. He was taking instruction, and suddenly he found himself named bishop. So he got the sacramental grand slam. Received them all at once, and the fullness of holy orders. And he had a funny joke in one of his early homilies. He said, "I'm teaching you what I'm just learning myself."
Well.
Oh, and the Holy Spirit says, you're ready, right?
That's true.
Yep.
And he really did immerse himself in the deepest study of theology, and he was fluent in Greek and other languages, so he was able to read the commentators of the Eastern Church and even Jewish commentators. He knew Philo, for example, very well, and he's one of the most reliable witnesses to the early texts we have of Philo. So he was just omnivorous as a reader, and he would read a lot, and he's the first person we know of who read silently. At that time, most people would read aloud as they were going through a book. And Augustine was startled when he walked in on Ambrose, and he found him reading silently. He had never seen this before. So
interesting.
Yes, it is.
Well, and we're so lucky, because he has left us so much of, not only as a reader, but he was a writer.
He was. Most of his writing is actually just taken from his preaching. He wasn't a man to sit down and write, although we do have some letters that were written, he says, by his own hand, letters he wrote to his brother. And they're good, because they're very colloquial. And, for example, the earliest witness to the word the Mass, to describe the liturgy is in one of Ambrose's letters. You know, he's writing to his brother and he says, I have to keep this short because I'm going to say Mass now.
Mm-hmm.
But Ambrose is a preacher above all, and often his secretaries, he had some great secretaries, including his brother and a man named Paulinus, who took down a lot of what he said as he was saying it, and then they would edit it into a final form. But his works were so revered that when the printing press was invented more than 1,000 years later, his were among the first collected works to be published.
Wow.
Yeah. He's a great read.
Well, and he really came along at a time in the church where there was some, for our listeners, the establishment of the church as being allowed to be openly practiced in the Roman Empire.
Right.
I mean, this just came, it was only a few years.
Right.
Am I correct on this, Mike?
Well, yeah. It was tolerated from about, 313 on.
Right.
But in 380, it was more or less mandated that Christianity was the official religion and the other religions were not tolerated. Ambrose was an interesting figure in that period because he did not, he opposed, for example, the capital punishment for heretics, which some of the emperors were zealously promoting.
Wow.
They wanted to keep the civic order that way. He also insisted on the autonomy of the church within the empire because what happened with toleration is that in some places the churches got co-opted by the civil government and the church was being used for political purposes. And Ambrose wanted to avoid that. So he was always very careful to preserve the rights of the church. At one point when an emperor summoned him to council, Ambrose refused because he said bishops are not accustomed to being summoned anywhere by emperors. So he made it clear that he was in his own sphere.
Right.
And it was the emperor who should answer to the bishop in matters of conscience. And this played itself out, for example, in the life of his great friend, the Emperor Theodosius, a man he says he loved with all his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And Theodosius, against the advice of Ambrose, made a retaliatory attack on the Thessalonians who had killed an imperial official in a riot.
Mm-hmm.
And he ordered a massacre in the city. And I think 7,000 people were killed.
Wow.
And Ambrose wrote him a letter, and he said, you've committed a mortal sin. And until you do public penance, you must not receive communion. And he wrote this as a private letter to him. But the emperor, because he respected Ambrose so much, he did public penance in the church. He took off all of his noble garments, and he wore humble clothes, and he prostrated himself in the church. We have many witnesses to this. St. Augustine describes it, and Ambrose describes it too in his funeral homily, Theodosius. So you see, because he knew his rights and because he stood by his rights, Ambrose was able to have such an influence on the emperors and on his times and on history. And in the Western Church especially, he preserved the autonomy of the church. And we can thank God for that.
Just the right man at just the right time.
Absolutely.
Another fascinating aspect of Ambrose that I never realized until I read your writings was that he had a great love for congregational hymns and singing.
Oh, he did. He did. And he was influenced in this regard by the Eastern Fathers, because the Eastern churches used to sing a lot more than the Western churches. And so Ambrose wanted this for his church, and so he wrote some hymns. There are, I think, 14 or 18 that are attributed to him today and that have survived, and a lot of them are translated, and we find them in hymnals. But he was a great fan of music, and it was another way that he connected with people in a popular way. He wrote the words, and he wrote the music, and he was famous for very simple melodies and very simple lyrics that people could remember and that they could understand. And his melodies always taught doctrine, and they always praised God. His lyrics always praised God. He this caught on like wildfire. People loved this. He would teach them the songs, and they would sing the songs. And Augustine said that during the time when he was struggling to move toward Christianity, Augustine was living a dissolute life, but he wanted to be Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Said that he was borne along by the melodies in Ambrose's church. He would go and listen to the people sing. He would listen to Ambrose preach, and these are the things that just bore him along toward the Catholic Church. There's another great story because when Justina, the Arian Empress, wanted to take over one of the churches, she actually had the military close in on the church while Ambrose was saying Mass, and so Ambrose and the people just stayed in the church. It was on Palm Sunday, and they stayed in the church through Maundy Thursday, singing songs. They just kept singing these songs that Ambrose wrote, and it sustained them, and they won.
How wonderful!
Absolutely, never
staring contest.
Yeah, never underestimate the power of great liturgy.
Oh yes, and beautiful music.
Yeah.
He probably would be a very strong advocate then of full and active participation.
Oh yes, he was an advocate, and he found ways to make it happen. He was a man who understood people. I think this came from his secular background as a governor. He had to be a diplomat. He had to understand people's motivations, and he had to know how to work a crowd. That's for sure. And then when he became bishop, they say that he had no secretary who screened people out. That he would just sit in his office with the door open, and anyone who wanted to walk in could just walk in and interrupt whatever he was doing. And tell him their problems, and they say Augustine says that that governors would come in to ask advice, and common people would come in to make their confession, and all of these people would come in and talk to him all day long. He must have been an amazing man, and he knew how to connect with people on so many levels.
Wow.
You brought him so much to life for us, Mike. And I just highly encourage everybody to get the Fathers of the Church, an introduction to the first Christian teachers, along with the Way of the Fathers, which is really a companion, isn't it?
Yes, a way to pray with the Fathers.
Because that's that you have there in their own words.
Right, and the book you mentioned before, Living the Mysteries, contains a number of writings of Ambrose that are his witnesses to the Mass and to the other sacraments. But especially when people read those sections on the Mass, they're going to see the prayers that they hear every Sunday. You know, Eucharistic prayer number one, Ambrose was using that prayer.
Okay.
So he's quoting it often, and he's explaining it in words that still ring true for us today.
Oh, just wonderful.
Awesome.
Just wonderful.
Mike, thank you so much for being with us today, and
for having me.
We're definitely going to keep tapping into you in future programs here, if you'll allow us.
Well, anytime. You have my phone number. Just give me a call, especially if you want to talk about the Fathers. They're wonderful, and they're living still. We sing Faith of Our Fathers, living still. They're still with us.
Yeah.
We can ask their intercession. We can share in their wisdom today.
And I encourage anyone to check out your website, MikeAquilina.com.
Oh, yes. And all my books are on there. Also, there are recommended readings in the Fathers that you can find on there. So I hope a lot of people will enjoy what they find there.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks so much. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you for having me.
San Chris McGregor and Mike Aquilina.